I understand what racism is. I mean, they chuck the bananas on the pitch at West Ham. I'll pick them up and eat them. What have the authorities done about it from then to now? They haven't actually done anything. The reason why they can say, in inverted commas, there's less racism, why? Because the best players in every team now are black. So there's a pub there called the Jolly Roger. So we've gone in there, and this kid said, well, why are you coming in here rubbing in our noses? And he's talking about how difficult it is, and he hasn't had the opportunity. So I said, what do you want to do? He said, I want to be a chef. I said, here's £3,000. You can never say that nobody's ever given you an opportunity. You know, I nearly died in Singapore.
Carl Palmer, welcome to Greatest on Demand Podcast, mate. How are you doing? You okay?
Yeah, really well, thank you.
Good, good, good. Big Dean Windass with us.
Here he is. I am so nervous.
Here he is.
Not because of my first podcast. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can't believe this, Dino. I did the first Under the Cost as well for the lads.
Oh, you say, do you know what I mean? When I said that this is my first ever guest, this is the man I've got
to
get on.
You did mention it, to be fair. He did say that. You said, when you were here a couple of weeks ago and we did yours, you mentioned you said first person ever needs.
I've got to get him.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely.
We're excited to have you, mate.
No, it's brilliant.
Looking forward to it. I'm sure there's going to be a lot that will, you know, hopefully hear from you that others might not have heard. So look, we always ask everyone at the very start of this podcast is, how would you define greatness, Carlton? Like, what do you think are the key characteristic traits that make somebody great?
Well, do you know what? It's interesting what you say that, and it's defining what is great, because everybody's got a different opinion about what is great. But I know what it takes to be successful and the difference that it makes to, or the difference that I see in other people. People, like my kids would say to me, what makes you different from other people? Like, so say for instance, I'm nearly 60 now, and people say, well, you look great. And then they always go back to the genes. And of course, the genes play a part. But yesterday I got up at 7:30 and ran 12 miles. So that's a difference. The people who are great are prepared to do different to other people. They're prepared to go outside of their comfort zone all the time. Not because they enjoy it. I don't particularly, never have enjoyed training. But, you know, right now I do it now to keep fit. But also I'm a bit vain as well. I like my clothes to fit nice. I like to look good.
Why didn't you put me onto there then? Why are you putting your gear on
today?
Well,
I've got Versace on, mate. Don't worry about that.
And this is all going to come out this, by the way.
I've got Versace. He loves all his always,
yeah, man's Reese, actually. What's yours?
I can see.
What's yours? Mine's Primark.
Oh, right, Primark.
Hey, don't worry about Primark. You can get some good
gear. It's the person wearing it, though, isn't it? Carl's like, I can wear this and fucking pull it off as the king.
Yeah. Some people can put Versace on and look shite, can't they? It's just the way it is.
Well, you look sharp, mate. You look sharp.
Looking sharp, mate. But so, look, I love that you own you is what I'm getting, even though that first question. I love that. You're very confident, you know, you're confident in your own body and your own approach, your own thoughts, feelings. Let's go deeper this then. So let's go back to your early childhood for us. What do we need to understand about you in those early years that might have shaped the person who's sitting in front of us today then?
And where was you born?
Well, I was born in Albury in Worley, West Midlands. That's where I was born. I was a West Brom supporter as a kid. My dad used to work 6 days one week, 7 days the other week. He was a bus driver. So it was my cousin who used to take me to watch West Brom as early days. And me and my dad used to watch the football, you know, back in the day when the FA Cup final was on. And it was great, wasn't it, on a Saturday. And you used to watch it all the way through, the build-up with the players and all of that. And it was fantastic. So I always wanted to be a footballer from the early age. Mm. But my dad is original fitting and fuck off, right? Mm. There's no excuses with my old man about anything. There's no excuses. You know, he brought me up to have the mentality of, you've got to be good enough. You've got to be good. So there's no excuses. So you have to do whatever you have to do to be the best, and if you are the best, then you will succeed. If I wanted to go back into football management today, I could go back into football management. Mm. I wouldn't get back in at the Premier League or Championship, but I'd get a League One club. You know, a lot of the guys, and when you come onto the topic of racism, it exists, and you know, I don't like talking about it because then you highlight it, that it's there. at the end of the day, like I say to my kids, be the best and you'll have no excuse.
Did it exist when you was a kid? When you was growing up though?
Listen, it was horrible. When the players are talking about today about the racism that they received, it was nothing like it was back in the day. It was horrible. I remember when we played at Millwall, I didn't even come out for the warm up. You've got kids as our coach is pulling in, going, look at the black cunt on the coach, right. And the little kids on their dad's shoulders. I didn't even come out for the warm up. So my mentality is, when my mum and dad came over from Jamaica, right? You know, my dad used to have to go in the black canteen. Because there's a black canteen, there's a white canteen, right? Yeah, so I look at that and my dad's had to go through that, right? Because my mum's Jamaican, but she's light. So they go to the pitches, my mum had to go in the white entrance, my dad used to have to go in the black entrance, right? Yeah. So I'm not walking off a football pitch for somebody who's going to call me a black bastard. Yeah. I'm not walking off for that.
Yeah.
You know, you don't see a chairman come down and say, right, take the lads off because they're getting abused.
Yeah.
You don't hear a manager coming in and saying he's being abused, can take off. So I'm one of those, I go the other way. If somebody's like, I'm on a football pitch and somebody
goes...
But
what was it like, not in the professional game, what was it like when we were growing up as kids?
Early years.
Well, like when you was at school...
Oh yeah,
do you know like
I was in fights all the time.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So like when you was at school, like when you was like when like my first 11v11 was, I was 9 year old. So when you was 9 year old, was you still getting that stigma? Was that?
Oh yeah, no. Well, where we lived, because my dad was, you know, he was in the army, travelled, he did really well for himself. So where we lived was an affluent area, right? So I went to school, and there was probably 3 black kids in the school. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm. And you're in that situation from day one where, you know, I think it's an easy thing for people to, you know, I understand what racism is.
Yeah.
It's an easy thing if you're black for somebody to say, oh, you're black bastard, right? You know, if somebody's ginger, it's easy to say that. If somebody's fat, it's easy to say that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Of course.
But I was brought up in there and it was difficult. It was hard, you know, when I first got into the team at West Brom. You go and play away games. It was tough, but that's your character. That's the way I was brought up by my dad. It's don't make an excuse. Get on with it and get through it.
Yeah.
I mean, they chuck the bananas on the pitch at West Ham. I pick them up and eat them. I love them.
Brilliant.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
if you call me a black bastard and I'm playing football, get it right, rich black bastard. Get it right. And then what happens is you go down that route, then you're arrogant. Then you're arrogant.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you can't win. But that was my way of dealing with it.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I put a front on about it. But in all honesty, did it affect me when I was younger? Yes. As I got older, no.
Yeah.
Because obviously, when you're in the footballing world and you're being successful, you're kind of, you know, it's on the outside, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You go home to your house, you shut your gates and you're away from it all. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I fucking love that. So did you... Would you have used all that to give you that fucking fight to prove people
absolutely.
Wrong?
Yeah, absolutely. Every time I went out to play, I wanted to be the best player and get man of the match say, fuck
exactly.
you, I'll
yeah,
show
exactly.
you, I'll show
because
you.
Because I used to get called fat bastard by every football supporter, even my own supporters probably. But when I scored a goal, I'd get my belly out. And because I was never ever fat, I'd always get my belly out. So with you doing that, eating a banana, that's you saying to them,
I'm not saying it should be accepted.
No,
and this
it
is where, you know, with John Barnes and Stan Collymore and whatever, we had a bit of a ding-dong about going forward. I'm not saying it should be accepted, but what I'm saying is, right, let's look at this, right? What have the authorities done about it from then to now? Kick it out of racism. I know they're trying to do stuff, but what have they actually done? They haven't actually done anything. If you look at the game today, the reason why they can say, in inverted commas, there's less racism. Why? Because the best players in every team now are black.
Yeah.
Majority of them.
Gosh,
there's more black players around.
Yeah.
When I started off, there was the likes of me, Mitchell Thomas, you know, very few black players around. But now, most of the teams that are around, the top players are black.
Yeah.
So it's very hard for you to go to a football match now and sit down and see. But what's the first thing that happens? When England, the black players miss the penalty for England, what do they do? They revert back to it, don't they?
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
It is what it is.
Well, the trouble is these people do that. They're, for my opinion, they're very rude. But but they're just jealous.
No, they're ignorant as well.
Ignorant. They're, yeah, they're rude ignorant. And ignorant and jealous, though. They're That's ignorant. The thing.
Uneducated as well at the same
yeah.
time.
Uneducated, yeah. Yeah.
It's because the thing is in life, isn't it? I mean, I've seen it now with my business, like before, and like I always say, tongue in cheek, lad with three GCSEs, yeah? And you outgrow people. And whether it be they call you racial slurs, whether it be fucking names, whatever it may be, you outgrow them with the skill that you have.
Yeah.
And people don't like that. Because I said it today on my Instagram, is like, people, and there's times, and you'd have found this as well in the game, just moving away a little bit from like even just the racial slurs, etc. But because of your skill set, people at the early stage would want Carlton to do well, because Carlton, I'm rooting for yeah. you. Let go get it. And isn't it funny? When you go get the thing they're rooting for you to do, they want to tell you, like, oh, you think you're fucking big dog now, don't you? And the reason being is because people want to help you to build your dream.
Yeah.
But then when you get to that outcome, you get the dream, yeah. they're then upset because you've actually outweighed their own dreams and ambitions yeah. that they couldn't achieve.
No, it's true. And the jealousy factor that comes in, I mean, one that springs to mind is Anthony Joshua. Mm. I mean, what he's done for British boxing, right? You know, I know Carl Froch will say, well, he fought in front of 90,000 at Wembley Stadium, but Anthony Joshua transcended the sport of boxing.
Absolutely.
You know, where he's come from to achieve what he's done and to go on to win world titles, people in the boxing game have started to earn more money because of Anthony Joshua. Then the first time he gets beat, oh, well, he's a fraud, he's this, that and the other.
Yeah,
he's
yeah,
much
yeah.
more than what he's achieved as a boxer.
Totally agree.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that's life, and what you can't do is, or what I don't do is, I'm not cynical about it. Yeah. It is what it is. Yeah. I don't agree with it, but I'm not going to use it as an excuse either. But you've got to have a stronger mindset than that. And my mindset is stronger than that.
Was you always tall? Was you always because you're a very big man, aren't you?
Yeah.
Was you always tall? Was you obviously very tall and lanky as a kid yeah, growing up?
Yeah, tall and skinny.
And I'll ask the question which I've always got asked is, obviously you was the best player in your school. You was the best player in your...
But I was never the best player. I was never the best player when I played at West Brom, Coventry, Nottingham Forest, Leeds United and whatever. But you know what? I knew that.
Yeah.
And that was all right. Mm. And when I went out to play on a Saturday, and I'm not putting myself down. I've got 19 England caps.
Plus,
yeah. And I played for England at all levels. I'm not putting myself down.
No.
But the most important thing is to know where you are in life. Mm. And when you know where you are in life, you can succeed. Mm. So I weren't the best. And I was coming up against players who thought they were the best, but then they come up against me and found out, right, well, hang on a minute. I'm very good at knowing what to do. And that was Ron Atkinson enabled me to do that. He said, right, we've got the likes of John Sheridan and Chris Waddle who can play, but John Sheridan and Chris Waddle can't run like you can run. I mean, if you look at the modern day game now, I was at the Sheffield Wednesday game the other day against Luton, and everybody's obsessed with playing this eye line. If I was playing in that game, I'd have murdered Luton because I'd have bombed on. No midfield player in the game now runs without the ball and makes a run in behind. Nobody does.
No.
So I knew what I was good at, and I perfected that and worked really hard at that. So I could hold my own in the Premier League. I could hold my own at the international level. And if people say I weren't a good player, that's their opinion.
Their opinion, yeah.
And it don't really bother me.
Yeah, but the trouble's in teams. Do you know, I couldn't do what you did. Do you know, I was fit, but I was, you know, I wasn't quick. I was, but the one thing is, I always said that we need people like that. We need people like you to get the ball to Waddle and Sheringham.
Yeah,
Shez.
Yeah.
We need, as I think Lee Pearling called it, and it's not being rude, a water carrier.
Yeah.
Mm. We need a water carrier because our team don't function without you.
Well, if you look at all the teams who win the league, if you look at Leicester, they won the league title, and everybody goes on about, you know, and it was called the Makalele role.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But every team that's successful needs one of those.
Yeah.
Look at Manchester City now. How big an effect that Rodri's not playing for them, right? But you look at Rodri and you think, doesn't really look like an athlete, but he's very effective in what he does, and it knits the team
everything
together. You know, the midfield player who was at Leicester who won the league went to Chelsea and they won the league. Because of his ability to get round to the football pitch, not always the most talented player.
Was it?
No, the black lad.
I forget.
No, not McLean.
No.
Oh, Conte.
Conte, yeah.
Yes. Conte, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh,
unbelievable.
And they
unbelievable
go on to
athlete.
Win, they go on to win the World Cup. Athlete. And you need players like that. You know, you're looking at
they're Chelsea, didn't you?
You're looking at Cancedo, who's settling now down into the Chelsea side. He was brilliant for Brighton. The midfield player rolls it together. So you need those type of players, and they're not going to be the players who are going to get the headlines. People don't see what these players really do unless you're analysing the game really in depth. But without those players, you can't win a league title.
Yeah, same with Villa. If I think back to Villa when Gareth Barry were there, even with someone like Gareth Barry, didn't get the praise, I think, and even Carrick. At times, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I felt they were underrated players as well.
Yeah, well, so you only see what you want to see.
Yeah.
But you've got to know the game as well. And this is what upsets me a little bit, where I see people who are commentating on the game and they're in, and I think it's jobs for the boys. They don't really give the information to the public because they don't highlight the things like that when you see, you know, a player who's holding the team together. They only highlight it when they say
flashy stuff. Yeah.
No, they only highlight it when it comes out, oh well, Spain have just won the World Cup and Rodri's played every game and Man City now have capitulated, and you'd say, well, just because of one player. But that's the way it seems.
Of course, yeah,
so
yeah,
when
yeah.
you first started making a name for yourself then, Carls, on the stage, and you're putting your name about, what would you say was the biggest misconception people might have had about you?
That I can't play. And then when they played against me, then they found out.
Yeah. Why do you think they thought that?
Because I think that was the media. The media didn't like me because what I've never done, I've never taken any money off them. Because I've always said, like, I've got great admiration for David Beckham, but I've also got no sympathy for him. Once you take money off him, then you've
got you,
haven't they?
Then you money for old rope then, because they're going to hang you. So they didn't like me because I would say what I've got to say, and I'm not interested in their money. So then they would have a perception of me that gives to the media. You look at Peter Crouch, there's a perception about Peter Crouch. Bloody great footballer, Emelieski, great footballer. I mean, Peter Crouch's touch, his ability to bring the ball down, bring other people into play and score goals. But the media used to, you know, try and ridicule him because he was tall. And they did the same as me. And listen, don't get me wrong, I don't look like a footballer, so I get that. But you've got to show what somebody does. I mean, the one that I always talk about that highlights who I am as a player and the way the media don't get it is that you see the one clip where Leeds United are playing Manchester United and Cantona flicks the ball over my head one way and over my head the other way. And all they talk about is the great skill by Cantona. But when the ball comes down the other end, I get a blocking. So he makes me look a fool with his great bit of skill, but I get a blocking.
Yeah.
Now the commentators who are watching the game don't even mention that.
Right.
Because they're not looking at that. They're just looking at the great bit of skill by Cantona.
They fucking will now, mate, because we'll highlight that. We'll put some ad spin on it.
We'll show that.
So
yeah.
At your peak, obviously you went on to play for England in the Euros. Big fucking team, Gaza, the lot, all in there, yeah? Were you... I'm really interested in knowing this because I see it from a lot of footballers. Like, when you get to that pivotal moment that you're working towards, and you've told us about your earliest years, getting to that point, were you truly happy at that stage, or you're always thinking of the next step and not being able to enjoy those moments?
I've never been able to... I'm always one of these people who move forward. My book's called It Is What It Is. So I'm one of them. Today's today. What's done today, I move on. I never look back.
Yeah,
the first time I looked back was when I had the heart operation 8 or 9 years ago when I stared death in his face. And then you start looking back and looking at what you've done and achieved. Other than that, for me, I just keep moving forward. Today's today. I get done today and I move forward tomorrow. What's done is done. I move on. I don't like talking about what's gone.
And then when he had this, we had a Chef Wednesday v Chef United legend game for that charity. Can you remember?
Yeah.
And I walked through the door. Him. I went, are you winding me up? I went, you've just had a fucking heart attack. Jeez. Anyway, that was then, Dean. He says, the game's today. Exactly. And he's still running around like a fucking blue-ass fly. I'm like, oh, my God.
And what's your reasoning behind that? Is it the love of football? Is it a love of you trying to push yourself? What's your reason?
No, listen, like I said to Luce, I've not got a death wish Obviously, I want to, especially now, you get to this stage of your life when you've been grafting, when you've been struggling, and then you get in a position that I'm in at the moment, coming up to 60, where I'm very comfortable in life and I can do within reason what you want. So I want to get on, enjoy it, enjoy my grandkids, enjoy my life. But unless somebody can give me a reason to not do the things I'm doing, then I'll keep doing them. I see the doctors regularly. I get regular checkups. They say there's no reason for me not to be doing the things I'm doing. I'm a little bit more careful now in terms of, not pushing myself to that extreme. But no, I've still got to get on. I mean, I'm now training for the half marathon on the 23rd of March at Sheffield that I'm doing for MenCap Charity. Nice. And we just get on with it. Do you know what I mean? You can't sit down and worry about things too much, because then you don't actually live your life. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I know, because every time I see you, you've either got a fucking pint of Guinness or a glass of red wine in your hand.
And a cigar.
And we just spoke about Portugal and Spain, and we've got the right idea. We need to get you over, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
Different
absolutely.
Life, mate.
Absolutely. I mean, you have to... You know, for one thing for me is the UK. I remember this going back years, and I remember when we were playing. I turned down going and playing abroad on several occasions. I always wanted to come back to the UK, but the UK is not the same place now. It's not. It's dark in the morning when you get up. It's dark in the evening. I mean, look at what happened in Sheffield. 15-year-old boy got killed going to school.
Last week. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Got killed going to school.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what is the world coming to? So I'd rather be in a warm country. You know, I get up in the morning, it's brilliant, I go running, go and play golf, sit on my patio, have a nice glass of wine and a cigar. And you know, I'm not saying the UK's got a lot of great attributes, but I'm saying it's not the place. And I remember going back years ago, and we normally, after we play an England game, we normally, our plane's chartered, so we come straight back. And I remember Graham Taylor saying, is anybody really fussed about going back to the UK? To a man, we weren't. We all stayed over and had a night out and flew back the next day.
Yeah.
It's not the place it was. So, you know, again, it's about that. I mean, my missus is now, oh, well, we've got the grandkids and this, that and the other. I said, listen, I've grown my kids up. I love the grandkids. They can get on the plane, come and see us in Portugal.
Gosh, yeah, exactly.
It's the same I said to my mum. So I think, I've obviously, you hear me, I sound like a broken record. I always say it all the time. My saying is life's a game. So you start it, you end it. What happens in between is what matters.
Yeah.
I've got a strong mentality too, I'm sure you'd agree, where I'm just get up and go. If I fucking lose, I haven't lost. It's a lesson. I learn from it. Yeah. I build and I grow. So I want to get to the football career of, like, what people might not know about as a footballer, and you can obviously jump in here, is, for you, Carls, what was your darkest moment as a player? What is it as a player that people don't see behind the scenes?
Well, to be honest with you, when you say what's the darkest moment, you have difficult times in life, and I say this to the kids all the time, but that shows your character. I don't really get down too much. If a situation happens like what happened at Leeds United, I went there, Howard Wilkinson was the manager, he got the sack when we were fifth or sixth in the league, which was a real bolt in the, you know, because I really liked Howard Wilkinson. And then George Graham come in. I was on big money, and George Graham come in and said, you won't play for me. And I'm like...
Did he give a reason for that?
Didn't give a reason. He said, you won't play. So I'm looking at him and thinking, he's not really not going to play me. You know, I'm on big money and I'm a grafter. If anybody was a George Graham type of player, I was.
And who was in the midfield then? Speedo?
No, Speedo had gone. Speedo was probably at Everton or Newcastle by then. I don't know. Yeah. So Bats was, when I went to Leeds United, Bats went to Newcastle.
Newcastle, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and that was tough when the opening day of the season comes. This is what I don't get when players, you know, don't want to play. I really don't get it. But obviously it's the money that they're earning.
Yeah.
But it really hurt me. And I thought, he's not going to do this. But it did. But, you know, you have to show your character. And I showed George Graham that he couldn't break me. He'd done it to bigger players at Arsenal, but he couldn't break me. He couldn't break my resolve. Nobody can break my resolve. I get down, but then I find a plan and I find a way. And that's what my dad taught me, to find a way with no excuses. Mm. You know, I look at my dad when he was the one who, I remember, I got in the first team at West Brom. I was on £500 a week. My dad was on £250 a week, right? He's gone to me, you got to buy an house. I don't want a house, Dad. Who wants an house at 16?
Yeah,
don't
yeah.
want a house.
I just want the real.
He said, you're misunderstanding me. He said, you are getting an
house.
Right? So he took me down. He gave me the deposit to buy the house. My mum and dad gave me the deposit to buy the house. Took me to the auctions, got me a red Ford Escort from the auctions, and still to this day, that got me on the route. I earned more money till I got my transfer from Leeds United from buying and selling property. I bought that property for 21,000. When I got sold to Sheffield Wednesday, I sold that for 36,000.
Mm,
right? But that was him teaching me the right way. Yeah. Used to have a box in there, would put 50p in for the electric and the gas.
Yeah.
I was playing in the first team. Third Saturday in the month, I'd be watching match of the day. It's gone, boom, the lot's got into bed, duvet on, one and two up to mum and dad's the next day. There'd be a stack of 50s on the side. Fuck off now. I want them back on payday. And that was it.
Right, yeah,
Do you know what I mean?
So it's showing you the value of money and how to make money at that age.
At that age.
Shows the importance of a mentor, doesn't it? So would you say having a mentor in your life is super important, whether it be your dad,
It's very important, and it's very important to have good people around you. Mm. Good people around you, good family. I have a saying, family and friends can only be considered as family if they act like family and friends.
Yeah.
If they don't, they might as well fuck off.
Yeah, exactly,
and that's the way I am.
Yeah. We have deep sayings about that. I think, obviously, me being, I always say, privileged to manage Dean's Grove, I'm a Bradford City fan, right? So even when we got to meet each other, we got to know each other on a level, didn't we? Deeper than just what people perceive and see. And we said the same. I see Dean as family, and I think you're right. It's like, you can read people. I feel like, do you know what it is for me, Cats, right? I feel people with your mindset, and I would say I'm very similar in that sense, like, fuck it, it's going to be over one day anyway, and no one gives a shit about what I've done or what I'm doing. They can all talk now. They don't give a shit when they go behind their own closed doors. They can see their own selves.
But they don't even know you.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
They're making opinion. I mean, it's funny enough, right? I've had this perception about Roy Keane, right? Played against him, without a doubt, world-class footballer. But I've always thought he was a twat.
Yeah,
I'll be honest with you. But I don't know him. I'm making that assumption, and I don't know him.
Yeah, you don't know him.
But now seeing him commentating and seeing him doing his podcast and whatever,
brilliant.
He's one of the only ones I'll actually really listen to.
Yeah,
because I like his mentality, and I like the way he talks, and he talks honestly, and he's straightforward. But I've got a perception, not really knowing him, and I'm making an observation.
Well, we've all done it.
And we all do it, don't we?
Yeah, well, when I played against him, and I can remember, I tell it on the afternoon circuit, which you're on the circuit now, is I left one on him, and I left one down his Achilles. And I always just say this, my dad used to say to this, if somebody says he's going to punch you, they're not going to punch you.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell you that I'm going to punch you.
No, no.
Because I'm going to get a punch back, aren't I?
Yeah.
And I remember playing Bradford against Man United, Valley Parade, got beat 4-0. When Gary Walsh miskicked
it and tell
him. But what he did was, about 15 minutes, Carl, he'd done me.
Yeah.
And he just got on with it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I thought, I respect you for that.
Yeah.
But I'm like you. I love listening to him. And you've played him many times.
But of course, but I have done, and we've had some unbelievable battles. Yeah, unbelievable battles. And I've always respected him as a player, make no mistake about that, but I've always thought, I've heard stories, which we all hear stories and whatever, I thought, he's a bit of a twat, him. But then seeing him on TV, seeing him doing the things, you know, you hear his stories about his running with Mick McCarthy with the Irish team.
Yeah, I've watched
but
that.
Now I understand his mentality. He'd got to that place in his mind where it wasn't about Mick McCarthy. It was about, as I perceive it to be, it was about him wanting to be the best that he could be, and him wanting the Irish team to be
the best
that
they could be,
and standards. And so I'm like thinking, right, I'm making a judgment about somebody who's pretty much like myself.
So like there, I worked with Incy.
Yeah.
At Middlesbrough. And you're like him.
Yeah.
And this is what I love about you. Like you just said there, you don't care what people think about you. Incy didn't.
No.
And Incy went like that. He says, oh, they call me Big Time Charlie. And they go, I am, because I've played for fucking big clubs.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? And I'm a big time player.
Yeah.
You have that attitude.
Yeah.
Where's that attitude come from?
Well, the thing is, right, I look at it and think, right, when People criticise me. I mean, there's a thing on social media that a comedian goes on and talks about me being the worst player to ever play for England and this, that and the other. And then I look at things like that and I think, well, this is a comedian. If that came from the likes of Gary McAllister or, you know, Ray Wilkins, God rest his soul, or somebody like that who knows the game, then I'll take it on board. So I have this mentality from my old man. My old man gave me this mentality. And it's basically, Colton, you do what you've got to do regardless of other people. Mm. And don't worry about what other people think. And I always, I've just passed a book on to a few friends now about an American psychologist who talks about, you know, you've got to be the best version of yourself. Mm-hmm. And as long as you're comfortable with who you are and the way you are, you don't have to worry about whatever anybody else thinks. Mm-hmm. When you're in the public eye, you're always going to be criticised. Everybody's always going to be an opinion. The amount of people who've come up to me and said to me, well, you're not like what they perceive you to be. I said, well, you don't know me. My missus, Lucy. When I first met Lucy and we first went out, I think after the second or third date, she turned around to me and she said, you're nothing like what they say you are.
You're
I said,
the who? Palm of the football.
I said, well, who? Who? People who don't fucking know me.
Yeah.
People who don't know me.
Yeah.
And that, and you have to live with that. So you have to have a tough exterior. You have to be very focused in what you're doing and what you want to do. And as long as you've got your route and as long as you've got your path and you're comfortable with that, fuck anybody
totally
else.
Totally agree.
But the trouble is people do say that, not just about you or myself, or probably a lot of people. And people quite, and it pisses me off a little bit where they go, you're just normal, aren't you?
Yeah.
Well, when you're in my company, yeah, I am.
Yeah.
But when I'm not in your company and you don't know who I am, then you've got an opinion to say, oh, is this or is that, is that? But until you talk to us, we're just normal people, all right? We're in the public eye, we you earn a lot of money to play. It means
just
nothing. It's just a label. Exactly. It's just a label.
We're all human. And
I love that. I love going, well, do you know what? Yeah, because you didn't know me, mate. So I don't make an opinion, but we all make opinions about people. Yeah,
absolutely. What you've said there, what I love, is my biggest characteristic trait, and I think you've got it too, is I'm fucking selfish, mate. For the right reasons. So I'm selfish in the sense of I know what I want, how I'm going to get it, and I know if I've got that same mannerism, that same drive, it's only going to do a positive benefit for my missus, my kids, etc. So when people look at selfishness, they think of the opposite, the negative of it. Mm. Oh, you don't care about anyone else but yourself. No. Selfishness is putting me in a position to know that I'm fucking good at what I do, and therefore I'm going to do the thing that I know is going to benefit others around me.
No, I will help other people out. Right, but I've always said this to my missus and I've said it to my kids, right? I take care of me and mine first.
Yeah. Which is selfish, way.
And you know, listen, I don't believe in luck. I really don't believe in luck. I believe in hard work. Every person I know who's successful have worked extremely hard and make a lot of sacrifices. I've got to be honest with you, sometimes people don't get a break and they work hard. I remember one time we're in Sheffield, and this is a true story. Dalian Atkinson, God rest his soul, and Dave Bennett, when they first came to Sheffield Wednesday, they were renting a flat in the red light district in Sheffield. Mm. So they said to me to come down to see them. I've gone down. I didn't know really where they were. I've got down there. I said, what the fuck are you doing renting round here for? But the two of them, they birds and all that down there. So there's a pub there called the Jolly Roger. So we've gone in there, rough as fuck, right? Rough as fuck. And a guy came up to us and he said, and it was getting a bit heated in there. Dalian can handle himself, I can handle myself, and it was getting a bit heated. But you don't want to be going out and having all that bollocks. So I said to him, let's go somewhere else. And this kid said, well, why are you coming in here rubbing in our noses, whatever? I said, rubbing in your noses, we're just having a drink. He said, well, it's all right for you guys. You don't have to struggle and this, that, and the other. So I said to him, sit down. So he sat down and we ended up having a chat. And he's talking about how difficult it is, and he has to sell drugs to keep his family, for his parents, and to keep his family, and he hasn't had the opportunity. And I said, well, I get that, but it also transcends from, you know, like I said, kids having kids, and they're not in a position, so they end up in this position where they are.
Yeah.
So these kids said, well, I've never had an opportunity. This is what I have to do for my family. So I said, what do you want to do? He said, I want to be a chef. I said, so what would it take you to be a chef to get out of your situation? I said, what would you take? And he said, well, I'd have to go to college. I'd have to do this, I'd do that. I said, well, go over there, think about it, and come back and tell me how much money you need. This is on my kid's life. How much money you would need to do what you got to do. So he come back over, he sat down, he said, if you give me $3,000, I can do this. I said, right. I said, I'll be back in half an hour. So I went back to my house, got $3,000 out safe, come back. I said, right. I said, here's $3,000, right? You can never say that nobody's ever given you an opportunity, right? You can never say that. When I was playing at Southampton, 12 years later, I get a letter from the kid. He was not the head chef, second chef at the Savoy Hotel. Had his dreadlocks cooked off and whatever. Brilliant. Sent me the cheque for $3,000 and never cashed the cheque.
Oh,
so I do believe that we all need an helping hand. And you need a leg up. But you've also got, you know, like I've lent him that money, but even if I talk to him now, he's had to put the graft in to get to where
to get to where he is.
Everybody wants the view, but nobody wants the climb.
Exactly. And people say to me now, how come you're in the position that you're in now? I never stopped working. I knew, and I were lucky that I had people like Howard Wilkinson and Ron Atkinson to mentor me, right? I knew when I finished playing football, although I finished football having a few quid, I knew that if I couldn't maintain that lifestyle because I didn't have that type of money coming in every month. So I worked my nuts off. I went to Dubai for 5 years. I went to China for 8 years. Now, I retired when I come back at the age of 55 because I can now and pick and choose what I want to do. But it is hard work. And when you do that, opportunities do happen to come your way.
The saying's true, my dad, it might be my dad who said it, is if you look for trouble, you're going to find trouble. Look for the opposite. If you're looking for good things to happen, look for it. If you could go back now, Carlton, to your younger self at the height of your career, and you could be sat in front of that young Carlton, actually now, even now, if you could look back at younger self, what would you say to your younger self now, knowing what you know?
Keep your mouth shut. I say it to my daughter now. My middle daughter's just like me. I can say whatever I can say now because it doesn't affect anything for me. My life's set now, right? And I'm comfortable. But when I was younger, I would have ended up with 60 or 70 England caps if I kept my mouth shut. Because I spoke out about things, and I'm glad I did. I spoke out about racism. I spoke out about things when I was younger. But it affected what I was able to do.
Do you regret that now or not? Because of the...
Well, when I've been spoke to my dad, he said to me... Well, it was funny because we did have a discussion about it, and he did say to me, I'd rather you have done what you did then than ended up with 60 England caps.
Right, okay.
I do regret it in some ways, but in other ways, I'm glad I did it. Because my life still turned out the way it has turned out. But if I had my time over, I would have picked my words better and picked the time that I spoke better, because I alienated the media. And if you alienate the media in our work, when you're in the public eye, you're in serious trouble.
Yeah. Because people don't know this, and I think I do know a little bit. When you played for England... Yes, you got your cap. In your day, or in my day, because we're relatively the same age in a sense, did you get paid for playing for England, or you just got a cap? Because I heard that you probably got that. Might be untrue. You're shaking your head. I heard that when I was playing, they got paid £300 to play for England, and then they got never got a penny.
No. What it is with the national team, and you shouldn't get paid to play for the national team.
No.
Now, what it is, if you're international football, obviously you then become, if you move to football clubs, then you're at a premium because you're an international footballer.
Right.
When you go to major tournaments, there is a fund from the FA.
Right.
So if you're in the European Championships, there'll be X amount that's shared out between the players,
right,
if you get to the, you know, quarter the quarterfinals or the finals or whatever. Yeah. So you will receive money, but it's not like, oh, well, you go and play for England and you get paid money for going playing for England. Okay. You don't do that. But if you get to a major tournament, of course, the FA are getting money paid from FIFA and whatever. And there is, like, just like when you go to cup final, there's a pot of money players
to win.
So you
win bonus, basically.
Yeah.
Subscribers won't know that. People think, oh, doing... Because I had an idea that you didn't, but somebody said, oh, years ago when I was playing in League Two for Hull, oh, these... Do they get paid 300 quid to play for England and they get a cap? And I just go,
no, you get a cap.
Yeah, I know you get a cap, yeah.
Yeah, you get a cap. And if you're playing a tournament, you get one cap that's got the teams you've played. So one cap could have four teams on it, whereas normally that'd be four caps. Do you know what I mean?
Right, okay.
Yeah.
You spoke openly about, I've read this somewhere, tell me if I'm wrong, but you have spoke openly before during your career of like, drinking heavy or doing much more, and I think I saw 10 pints in a night. Is that what I read? I read at one point there was like,
and
I'm interested.
Is that all?
Yeah.
To be fair,
but listen, what I'm saying here. So, you go on. Say what you're gonna say.
No, what I was going to say, we went on a golfing. It was a golfing in Norwich, right?
Yeah.
And I put this man to sleep.
Right.
We were drinking Guinness, and then we went on to red wine, and you started speaking Swahili.
Yeah, because I'd been on it the day before.
This is after his play career, though, right?
Yeah, I turned up in the morning. I've been on it the day before.
You've actually been on it the day before.
During that period, I know we spoke about it. It's different then. I get it's different. But I want to go away from saying it were different back then, from the drinking. And I totally get that. And viewers will get that. But the other point, Caitlin, where... Because I'm interested from even now of a lot of footballers. I know it's a different game, but...
I know, but
you could get into that and tell me that reason why in a moment. I just want to understand, like, during that time of when you were playing, did you ever feel out of control at one point?
No, never. I've always said, I've controlled the drink, the drink's never controlled me.
Yeah.
I've always said that. You know, like right now, I've come back, I had a reset, I was over Christmas in Thailand. And I had a reset because last year with my dad dying, Kev Campbell dying, Craig Shakespeare dying, Sol Bamba dying, Chris Bart Williams dying, a lot come on top of me, right? And I was really down and I was drinking heavily, and Lucy went to me, Carlton, it's getting a bit out of hand. And I said to her, listen, don't worry about that. I've always controlled the drink. But it was getting out of hand. But I sort it at my own time. And I went to Thailand and I sat down and I reset. And I've come back now where I'm not drinking in the week. I've gone back when I lived in Shanghai. I never drank in the week. I wait till the weekend, look forward to have a drink on the weekend and have a reset. So it never controlled me. When I played football, people forget. I played till the age of fucking 39, right? People forget that. And I retired on my terms, right?
Yeah.
So you can't play over 600 league games if you. But I was a big drinker, and I am a big drinker now. I love having a drink. I love the crack. I love going out and having a drink, and I ain't got a problem with that. You know, Sunday I took the missus out, mother-in-law out, went off to watch the football, and I'll be honest with you, I can't remember from 5 o'clock onwards. And I'm
For me, it's not. I don't think it's the drink for me. Like, after football, I struggle.
I think when you surround yourself with the right people, when you're drinking, it's different.
Yeah, but I like the socialisation. Then the socialisation comes in with beer.
Yeah, but
I can take beer or leave it. I'm like you now. I don't drink during the week.
Yeah,
but like I enjoy the weekend because you've got to live our fucking life.
Yeah, because think about it. If you drank with the wrong crowd, you drink for the wrong reason.
I was drinking with the wrong people.
But also, when this mentality now, when I look about it, but maybe Dino, you agree with me? The team spirit that we had at Sheffield Wednesday, that we went on to do what we did for 9 years, was built on the social,
on the night out,
right?
Yeah.
And the players who didn't drink, Chris Bart Williams, Mark Bright wasn't a big drinker. We had several players in that team who weren't big drinkers. They still come out, and we still had a crack. And the team spirit was built on that. Because I tell you what happens is when you have a drink. I've always said to Luce, I don't trust people who don't drink. Mm. People who don't drink, and if they don't drink, fine. But they're always soaking up information and watching people. But when people drink, you find the true people, right? You find what they're really about, right? If you look at our team at Sheffield Wednesday, and we could boost, nine of that team went on to be managers, very strong personalities, very strong characters, and you find out about what people are really about, right? So there's not, Big Ron used to say to me night before a game, if I didn't come down and have a drink, he wouldn't play me. He wouldn't play me.
Brilliant.
You know, and I think it was part of that, the sugar, part of the, right, not giving a fuck, part of sometimes, well, I've had a drink, right, I need to perform now. Do you know what I mean? I used to go in the players' lounge, Bob Gorlew at Sheffield Wednesday, who's the commercial manager, they used to have a glass of brandy for me. I used to walk in there where all the sponsors were in there, swig the brandy, I said, I'll be back in an hour and a half to collect the man of the match. And more often than not, I was.
Brilliant.
Do you know what I mean? And that's so it's about being in control, right, of the situations. Have bad things happened over the drink? Yes, they have. But I would say good things that have happened over the drink in my life than there have bad over the drink.
It's back to your mentality again, isn't it? Being that in control of your own mindset.
Is that? And you can always, whenever you do something, like, you can always say, oh, well, it's down to the drink, or it's down to, you can always make an excuse. Mm. I don't make an excuse. It's not like, you know, when I got done for drink driving, and I don't condone anybody doing drink driving. As you get older, you realise when you've got kids and grandkids, if somebody, God rest their soul, killed your kid or whatever, you go ballistic. I don't drink and drive now, ever. Ever. But when you're younger, you do daft things.
Yeah.
But like I said to my dad, when my dad pulled me about the drink driving, he said to me, well, Carlton, because I always said to him, Dad, honestly, I haven't done anything that I've thought this is wrong and still carried on doing it. He said, well, what about your drink driving? I said, well, I never thought about it. I thought about it at the time and saying, well, this was wrong when I did it. Because if I'd thought about it at the time and it was wrong, I wouldn't have done it. Mm. I just went out afterwards, obviously, you know, you look at it, you know, I nearly went to prison because I got done three times, and I was very lucky that I didn't go to prison over it.
Yeah.
It was only a technicality that I managed to stay out over prison. And then, obviously, you meet people at the right time in your life.
Mm.
And I met Lucy at the time when it would argue that my drinking was getting out of control, but I was going through a divorce, not seeing my kids. And I met Lucy at the right time, and Lucy turned around to me and said to me when I met Lucy, if you want to be with me, you can't be like that.
Mm.
So I had to make a change.
Well, you know, Kerry. And you know what you've just said is me.
Yeah. Mm.
Because I felt the biggest hypocrite ever when I got done. I was three times over.
Yeah.
13, 14 years ago.
Yeah.
Then I got done again.
Yeah.
But 10 years later, the next day, and I was won over.
Yeah.
But because you're in the public, but I, the first time I was out of control.
Yeah.
Because I was going through a divorce and this and that. It's not an excuse.
No, but it is.
But I said to people, if anybody killed my kids drink driving, I'd fucking kill them.
Yeah.
But then I went and did it, and I thought, you fucking hypocrite.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
But then you learn from it, don't you?
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? You've got to learn from it.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like going back to there about the drinking. Josh is teetotal.
Mm. Yeah.
And I say, and that's his choice.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? And people say, oh, is your son teetotal because of what he's seen you when you was How do you know what he's seen of me?
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean? Exactly. Was you in my living room when I was fucking arguing with his mother? No, he chose not to drink. And Josh goes to me, I don't get it why you don't drink. And I go, well, I don't get it why you've got to cost a fucking coffee every day.
Mm. Yeah, but
it's your choice.
Yeah,
do you know
it's
what I mean?
Your choice, and it's understanding, like my Luce now, right? She understands me, and she understands how to work me.
Yeah, Kerry does,
right?
Me,
So, say for instance, now Sunday's my day. I drink on a Sunday. Yeah. Always have done. Back in the day, even if I wasn't playing football, I take the kids horse riding, take them swimming. I'm in the pub by 1:30 every day.
Watching the football.
But you say it now, Luce. If I'm on a session in a pub, the worst thing you can say to me is,
don't go,
or you've had enough now, go on, I'll stay up
for two days.
But Lucy,
I'm going to show Kerry this one, I'll tell you.
No, but Lucy will go to me, I thought you said you wanted to be at home to watch the football at 5 o'clock. Well, I did. She said, well, it's 4:30. I said, well, what are you fucking waiting for? And I go then, you see what I mean? But if she'd have said to me, right, Colton, it's 5 o'clock, you've had enough you to drink. Enough. I'll fucking carry on drinking. Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly, do you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. And she knows.
I ain't been taught to.
You know, she knows how to, you know, how to deal with me. And she, like when she came, when we first got together and I was going through a divorce and I was spending money like it was going out of water, she'd turn up and say, why have you got 4 cars, Colton? You only need one car. Why have you got a cleaner? You can clean. Right. She has a car, I have a car, I do the cleaning. Right, in the house. I do the cleaning from top to bottom. We have a cleaner coming one day. I had to ring her the other day. I rang her. I said, Luce, she's at work, my missus, you know, and she's a school teacher. And she doesn't need to work. But this is what I say to the kids. She doesn't need to. So I said, but she's your role model when she doesn't need to work and she still goes to work and she enjoys it.
Yeah.
But I had to ring her the other day. I said, Lucy, is this right? I'm here doing the washing up and the cleaner sat down having a cup of tea. I said, something's wrong somewhere, isn't it? Get me?
It's right. We had a cleaner recently as well. And Alice watched this. Going back what you said there, he's like, it's important to have a strong woman behind you. We had a cleaner and then we got to the point where we just got rid of everything. Anything. I think I got carried away where my story, long story, I had £10 in my pocket, slept under Clapham Common, long story. And it was my missus who pulled me out from, I've been with 11 years now, and kind of allowed me to remind me who I am and what I'm trying to achieve. And I think having a good, strong woman behind you, I'm going to shout out Kerry here because I know her as well as my lass. You need those like strong women behind you, really. And also, like you said there, Cats, I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think when people watch this and they'll think about their missus now, and we might be doing them no justice. They might go, well, they're fucking women allowed.
We need to get wives on the fucking podcast. Yeah,
but allow you to have the freedom, to just be able to still do your own thing, I think is important also.
Yeah, no, it is. And she's a strong woman, and what she does is allow me to be me.
Yeah, yeah,
she doesn't agree with it sometimes, exactly. But she allows me to be me. You, as long as the line's not crossed, she's all right.
Yeah,
with
but
that.
What you've done when you first met, because I've met your wife, she, you know what I mean, very grounded woman. But what you've done is when you first met her, like Kerry, they know what they're buying into when they're with us. I says to Kerry, I know it sounds horrible, but I went, you're not going to be with a normal bloke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your wife's not going to be with a normal Carlton. You know what I mean? Because you're in the public eye. People judge you all the time when you walk out your front door. Do you know, blah, blah, blah. But you've gone. And I said to Kerry, I like my Sundays. Do you know what I mean? And Kerry will go out with the mates, whatever. But I'll go out and I'll say, right, I'll just go out on a Sunday and that. But like sometimes we'll go out together and have a Sunday dinner.
Yeah.
But still have a drink. Yeah. Still have a glass of red wine or still whatever. You know what I mean? So that's how. But you've said to your wife, you didn't know it was going to be a wife at the time, I love going out on a Sunday with my mates.
Yeah.
So then she knows.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you've got to not being a control freak, but you've made them ground rules where you know what you're buying into when you're going to marry an ex-footballer or a footballer. Yeah. That is your choice.
Yeah,
but don't try changing us.
No, but it's like what my dad said to me when I first said I wanted to be a footballer, because they always come out with the stats, don't they? And it's true. 92 football league clubs, most clubs run on a playing staff of 30 footballers. So there's 2,775 footballers in a population of 64 million. We are not normal people.
No.
We are not normal people. We've got to have something different to be in that minority. Yeah. They've got to have something different to get up yesterday morning at 7:15 and run 12 miles.
Yeah.
It's not normal.
No, and that's okay.
So as long as the biggest thing is what I've learnt with Lucy, which is good. Not to say that we don't argue. And when people say about, they don't argue. If you don't argue, right, in a relationship, and I'm not talking about having, you know, bad arguments.
But
if you've got two intelligent people, you are going to disagree on certain things.
Yeah.
But what you can't do is you've got to allow yourself to be you. She's got to allow herself to be you. And then you can work together to be happy.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
she knows what I'm about as a person. She knows what's important to me and what's not important to me. I know what's important to her and what's not important to me. And one thing about me is I'm a very loyal person. And if somebody, you know, I knew from the first day that I was going to be with Lucy, long term, I knew that. But when somebody supports you, when you're going through the things that you're going through, when things are down, then you know when things are going to be good, it's going to be good. Do you know what I mean? When you're going through a divorce and, you know, the money that you have to pay out, not being able to see your kids, you know, all the things that you've had to go through and whatever, and then she's there for you, you know, it's good. And you know, I do believe that things are meant to be the way they're meant to be. Lucy would not have put up with me when I was 21 or 22. No fucking chance. Mm. Not a cat and nails chance. Mm. She would have just, that's not for me. Mm. You know, so I don't think I've changed as a person. I think we all get older. Yeah. We all get mellow.
Yeah, we do.
But you also know when to draw the line. Like now, I'm not, like back in the day, I'd be out. But like now, I love the afternoon soiree. I'll go out, even if I'm in Portugal and Lucy's back at home, she knows by 9 o'clock I'll be back at the villa drinking red wine. Mm. That's it. Mm. I'm done. I like going out about 1 o'clock, be back at home by 8 or 9 o'clock, because after 9 o'clock, nothing good happens.
Nothing good happens, right?
Mm. You're back at home, and she knows that. She can ring me, and she knows I'll be back at the ranch.
Yeah.
I mean, so it is what it is.
Well, if I had a daughter, which I am, I've got two lads, I'd say do not marry a footballer. That is the moral of the story.
2023, you had a heart attack, didn't you? 2023, I believe. Is that right?
2023, that was the second one.
Second one, okay.
Second one, yeah.
That must have been scary.
No, because I didn't know I had it. I was doing the half marathon. I was doing the Sheffield half marathon. It was only afterwards when we went to the restaurant. I was sat down with Lucy and we went with some friends. And what I didn't want to do is Lucy had run under 2 hours for the half marathon. So she'd done really well, right? And I wasn't feeling well when I got back home, to be honest with you. I got in the shower and I have a thing that I can check my heart. And I was in atrial fibrillation. But I didn't want to say anything because I'm not one of these people. I'm not going to now take the gloss off of the fact that she's run over under two hours.
Yeah, yeah.
So I got out of the shower, wasn't feeling well. I did the thing. I knew I wasn't right. But I thought I'd leave it and I'll sort it out later because we're going out with friends. So we sat in the Prince of Wales and with all our friends and whatever. And after about an hour, I knew it wasn't well. So I just said to Lucy, I'm going to take myself off to the hospital. I said, you stay, it'll all be all right. When I got to the hospital, obviously they kept me in and said I had an heart attack. Mm. But it was only a smaller heart attack. And now I found out it wasn't a heart attack in the sense of a normal heart attack. The blood was showing a reading of an heart attack. The heart attack that was a real problem for me was, I'm 59 now, so that was 9 years ago. That was a real problem. But still, right now, they don't. There's no problem with my heart. There is absolutely no problem with my heart. I think the situation is, and I still go back to this, I'm not a doctor. You know, as Lucy would say, well, you seem to know it all, Carlton, but, you know, I'm not a doctor. But I think there's no way you can play football for as many years as we do, taking your heart over the maximum we do every day, every training, and then go into management and do the same and not have a problem with your heart. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what it is. You know, when I look at the players who are having heart surgery now, who are having heart problems, I think that's what it's got to be. Mm. But the doctor says to me, no, it's not. The surgeon who done my operation said it's not. He said, if you're young and fit, you should be able to do it. I just don't think it's normal. And the players who are having heart issues or having heart problems now around our area now, you know, I think it must have some effect. You know, I nearly died in Singapore. I had an 8.5 hour operation. I'm not on any tablets. I've not had any stem splints. I've not had anything. So, I think it is what it is. It comes around to when I do the half marathon or I do the marathon. I think, like Lucy said, I think the adrenaline gets high because you want to do well, and then it creates a problem.
Yeah, but that comes back to our football, that though, doesn't it?
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like people say, yeah, you got a great life, but like you said there, we did that. I played till I was 40 like you, and the thing is that I love training, I love getting a sweat on, you know, this and that, but you've got to get out of bed. I don't make blogs, I get out of bed, make your bed, but you've got to get out of bed, and I've got to train every day to be the best of my ability to play on a Saturday.
Yeah.
But even now, I train all the time now, even at our age. I'm 55, you're 59. And the trouble is that mentality always stays with you
yeah.
all your life.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Till your legs tell you that you can't do it, or your yeah. ankles or your knees. Mm. So it's the mentality.
Yeah.
And that's not because of your ticker. That's not stopped you from doing that.
No,
it?
No.
But that's the thing. That's why I asked that question, Kaz, because like you hit the nail on the head there. It hasn't stopped you. You told us if we go back that like, you're setting up to do another half marathon now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, the Sheffield half. Yeah.
Will you do something different? Because obviously the previous past experiences.
Well, do you know
no,
what?
Well,
no, no. The one thing it was on the day, right? There's certain things I would change on the day.
Mm.
It was very, very cold on the day, and I'm not good going from cold to working, right? So it was and we stood for ages. At the start line. So do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to stay indoors, and I'm going to start my run at the rear, at the back,
the until
when it kicks off.
Right.
And then I think I should be all right.
Yeah. Right.
I went because I wanted to do a certain time. I had a pace setter, right? So I'm not going to do that this time. I'm just going to do the run. And just get through.
And what's the charity you're doing for?
I'm doing it. I'm patron of Cav Care Cancer Charity,
right.
And so I do a lot for them. But I'm doing this one this year for MenCap. Lucy and I are doing it for MenCap charity this year,
brilliant.
Which you know, it's brilliant for the kids who, you know, all the kids and the autism and all of these brilliant. Different things. So it's great to give a little bit back.
Of course.
Do you know what I mean? And also test yourself. Also test yourself. I mean, the Sheffield Half Marathon is no walk in a park. I mean, for 6 miles, it's basically uphill.
Right.
I ran it yesterday. Horrible. It's horrible.
Yeah.
I don't like it. And I think to myself, what am I doing it for? And then I come back to my charity.
Yeah.
And halfway when I was round, and I was yesterday, and I was about to stop, and my dad was in my head. Pussy.
Oh, I was just going to ask
Pussy.
You
Pussy. Mm. Yeah, pussy. Yeah, yeah. Pussy. Keep going.
You see, I have my dad on my shoulder. Yeah, and I'm on my treadmill. Going.
Yeah,
because my dad died of an heart attack at 69.
Yeah, so and I was with him the day before. I went down in Birmingham. Every time I go down to Birmingham, see the kids and me see me, I go to my dad, and he always used to be find a way.
Yeah,
find a way.
He was always on my shoulder.
Find
keep,
a way.
Keep going. Keep
find
going.
Find a way. Find a way.
Yeah, yeah,
and crackers. They give me the second wind.
Of course, yeah, it's crackers, isn't it?
I was thinking honestly because you've done what I do. So I do a 5K run. Believe it or not, I do, mate. And my fastest is like I think 24:40 something, which is pretty good.
Yes,
yeah, do a 5K, but it's inclines, like uphills, etc. Yeah. And I'll ask goes when I come home, I'm panting in my head. My legs have gone by the time I get up that hill past this farmhouse, and I'm saying to myself, "Ah, you fucking said you weren't going to give up, and you're going to give up. Look at you fucking idiot. Go around saying you're the king, I'm the king," and that fucking pushes me on.
Yeah.
I'm playing with myself, ain't me, Darren?
Yeah.
It's me.
Of course, yeah.
And it's insane, isn't it? I feel like what you've said and what we've all gathered, and me knowing you. Is what message would you say to people to find like that? Because it's easy for us to say. Because I can't. The thing is, right? I can't give an answer.
Well, the thing is, right?
Because it's
do,
just
do you know
in you,
what
isn't
it is, and it is exactly what I said to my son. I remember when I was in Shanghai, my son rang me up and he was upset. He was about 14, and he was in a running club. And I said to him, "How's it going, son?" He says, "Not very well, Dad. They've told me." That if I'm in the bottom half next week, I can't come back. So he started crying, and his mum's like mothering him and saying, "Oh well, they shouldn't be saying stuff like that." And you know what? I turned around to him and I said, "Well, what are you ringing me for?" I said, "Do you want to be in the running club next week?" He said, "Yeah." Well, I said, "Well, you won't be in the bottom half, will you?"
Got to be in the half, yeah.
I rang him up the next week. I said, "Where did you finish?" He said, "I finished in the top half."
Nice.
And do you know what? I turned around to him. I said, "Let that be a lesson to you. Do everything to your maximum.
Gosh, yeah,
and
yeah.
once you've done it in your maximum, and you can then sit down and say, can't do any more. I could not have done any more."
Mm.
And once you get into that mindset, right, then that's all right. Do you know what I mean? When he done his, he was fuming because with COVID it and whatever, he missed out because, you know, the way it was with doing his A-levels, and he missed out by getting an A in one of them by one mark, and he was fuming. And I loved it. He got an A, and he was upset that he didn't get an A plus by one mark. I said, "That's what I'm teaching you.
Course,
that's what I'm teaching you. Be the maximum. So you don't have to be the best. You're not always going to be the best, but that doesn't mean that you don't have the mindset to be the best."
Yeah.
And that's where we're going wrong in the UK. If you go to other countries, now all of a sudden you get a medal for taking part. Mm. Now, if you're going to have a medal for taking part, just call it, right, a fun day. Mm. But don't, that's not life. If there's three jobs, right, go in, there's only one, you know, if there's three people going for a job and there's only one job, there's three people going for the job, they're only going to give the job to one person. So we've got to teach our kids to want to be the best. In other countries, they teach them to want to be the best. We say the Americans are arrogant. We say the Australians are arrogant. They are, because they want to be the best.
Totally.
And that's what you've got to be like.
Yeah. My five-year-old, if you say to him, what are you? He'll say, I'm a Donnelly. And if you say to him, what does that mean? He goes, it means I'm a winner. I'm a champion. I can achieve anything. He's five, Carlton.
Yeah.
And then people looked around me thinking to me, can I pause a bit straight? Nothing. He's five.
Yeah.
His mentality is to tell his
story early. Yeah.
And my missus said to me, oh, but he's got this sports day, whatever. I said, fucking sports day, he wins it. I said, if you come second, it's a lesson you've learned to fucking know how to be number one.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, you watch this sports day this year with all the other dads, and I'll fucking tell you all, you won't fucking get me, I'm telling you. I'll blow them all out of the water. Yeah. But it's a representation, like you said, with your dad, to show the younger ones, look, this is what it takes.
Well, I think your kids are a product of their upbringing.
Absolutely.
Right? Without. So, like my grandkids now, when they come round, they have to, they tea at the dinner table, knife and fork, manners, and I teach them all the time, because it's a product of their upbringing, of how they show, how you show them how to behave, how to conduct themselves, standards that got to cut. Because one thing that kids do, they mimic you. And whatever you do with those kids, if you spoil them, then you're bringing up spoiled kids who think they're entitled. My kids get, but they have to earn it. They have to earn it. My kids will get a deposit for an house when they're 30, when they can get a mortgage. Mm. I could make their lives a lot easier now, but my life wasn't easy, so I'm not making their lives easy. They've got to earn it. Yeah. And that's what you've got to do. It's not saying that I'm right in everything I'm doing, but I'm right for me. It's my rules, and I'm right for me.
I wish they'd done that with my kids.
You know, it's right for me, because that's the way I am, and that's the way my dad always used to be. He was the original, I don't give a shit about anybody else. I'm right for me, because that's my thinking.
Totally agree.
So I'm okay, you can disagree with me, and that's fine. Everybody's entitled to disagree. But my opinion is, like, you know, I've got to be honest with you. Like, you know, I was talking to my daughter about this the other day. We were down in Birmingham, and they're going on about, she was going on about the women's football, the England football team, you know, and with me and Simon Jordan had this debate on Talk Sport about the women coming out and saying they want equal pay as the men's football. But I look at that and I think, right, okay, right, and I've got three daughters, right, and I've got three granddaughters, right, so I'm not against women, but you've got to look at the facts. When the Women's World Cup went on, 150 million watched the Women's World Cup in total. When the Men's World Cup was on, 150 million people watched the first round. So it's all about revenue driven.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So when the women's game gets to the point that they are deriving the revenue for them to get equal pay, they should get equal pay.
Yeah.
What I do believe is, if you've got a man and a woman, and they're both doctors and they're both doing the same job, why shouldn't the woman get paid the same as a man? What, in football, Karen Brady is the CEO of West Ham, so she should get paid the same as a COO of another football club, right?
Yeah.
So it depends where, you know, the parity should come in. We shouldn't just say equal rights. And we've got to be careful. Like I've said to my missus, we've got to be very, very careful where you go with this. Because now, a man, I've always believed, and I'm old-fashioned, a man's a man, and you've got to let a man be a man. Like my missus lets me be the man, right? So women like you to send them flowers. Women like you to walk round and open the door for them and put their coat on. You've got to be careful not to lose that barrier of, you know, women being women and men being men.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying that they should be treated as a lesser entity
because
them. But you've got to look at where you want that consistency to be level. If they're doing the same job as a man, of course, then they should get paid equal. But you've got to look at things where you can't just come out and say, right, well, it should be parity for all. Because even as footballers, we don't all get paid the same.
No.
We don't all get paid the same because some are better footballers than others. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you can't go into a football club. When I went to Leeds United, I couldn't ask what Gary McAllister was on, because Gary McAllister was the best player in the team.
Yeah.
Captain of Scotland, captain of Leeds United.
Yeah.
You look where you are in the pecking order and put yourself in there. Mm. When you reach his level, if you could aspire to be his level, right, then you can go in and ask the managers for that. And that's the problem that's come into the game today, in my opinion. When I was playing football back in the day, when I started at West Brom, the best player was Brian Robson. You knew that because he had the best car. You know, when you go into a football club now, you don't know who's the best player because shit players are earning good money.
Yeah.
And that's not me being negative, because I'm retired and I'm financially secure. What I'm saying, that's what's ruined the game now, because, you know, I remember going back in the day when clubs then started, when the inception of the Premier League, paying players money, and I mean obscene amounts of money, just to sit on the bench because they needed a squad. And that's how the game's changed now. Do you know what I mean?
I love his stance, Carl. I think we're coming towards the end of the year with a quick fire question, but I love all these that we've asked, that you stand on your own two feet.
Yeah.
And I fucking love that. And this is why we do this podcast over.
Yeah,
is that it's totally different in the sense of, you stood there, you speak from how you would here, how you would out there, and all fucking respect to
you. That's what you get from. But I want to ask this, right? This is what I want to ask. When, and tell me if it's true, I don't know if it's true, somebody might be talking out of 10. When you was manager of Stockport County, something about champagne.
So what happened, when I was manager of Stockport, right, I went in there and what I said to the boys about drinking, right, is I ain't got a problem with you having a drink, but you come to work, you do your job. I've never missed a day of training through drink. I've never let my mates down through my mates or my teammates through drink. So what I said to Lewis is, we're taking all the boys out. So I took all the boys, they didn't know what was going on. So I took them all out on a Saturday night. Me and Lewis took them out. Got the Dom Perignon out, got the drinking out, got them all on the lash.
What a guy.
All on the lash. Called Dave Chandler out, over, right? I said to Dave, I said... Dave Chandler, he's the manager of Stockport now.
He was one of
the players. I signed him, doing a magnificent job
long
there. Magnificent job. He's a great lad, and he's doing a magnificent job. So I said to Dave Chandler, it must have been about 1:30 in the morning, I said, tell all the lads we're in training at 9 o'clock in the morning. He says, what do you mean, Gaffer? I said, tell all the lads we're in training in the morning, right? Lucy starts laughing, because she knew what it was all about. So they all come in the next day. I was 39 years of age. So I said to him, right, what we're doing is we're doing 6 half laps, right? Got to be done in 30 seconds. And then we do 1 full lap, got to be done in 70 seconds. And then we turn it round and go in again. And they're fucking looking at me. And then, so I'm in the front. They can't fucking catch me. Nobody can catch me. Finish the training session. I said, I ain't got a problem with you drinking. Go out and enjoy your drink. When we're coming, we got to work.
Good
and
man.
That's it.
Brilliant.
Fucking brilliant.
Brilliant.
And that was
brilliant
it.
Story. Good man,
so story. I wanted them to know, when people talk to them about my drinking, oh, this alleged drinking, still at 39, and I was still playing for Stockport, I was playing manager, right? I come into work, I do my job, I was at the front, because that was, I was taught that from Brian Robson from early age.
Who was
the alleged, he was a massive drinker. But he was at the front of the running all the time. No excuses.
When Venables signed me for Borough, God bless him, Terry, and Brian was like he was leaving at the end of the season. Anyway, Cotton Social, Brian used to join in all the time. And he liked his Budweiser, the Bri or whatever. He used to drink Budweiser. And we did an 8v8 or whatever. And I used to do this, but you know, he used to put the black bag on.
To sweat it out.
And he could, and Brian used to join in, and Brian was obviously getting on a little bit then. He'd have the black bag on. He'd never give the ball away. You could smell beer coming out of his paws, you know, lovely. On the training ground.
Yeah.
But he was still the best fucking
player. Yeah, absolutely.
Still the best player. But I couldn't do that, mate. I couldn't have done that.
Yeah.
I couldn't have got drunk on that night,
yeah,
and train the next day,
because
I would have been hanging out my ass.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I never used to do it.
Yeah.
And I used to have a drink after a game if we didn't have a game on a Tuesday. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? But I'd go out with the lads on a Tuesday night. They give you a day off on the Wednesday. I'd have to go in the sauna and the steam to sweat it out, and then train Thursday, play for train Friday, and play Saturday.
Well,
I couldn't do that.
There's less of modern players.
So I'm glad you weren't my fucking manager. Yeah. By the way.
There's less of modern players. Look, Arch, you've been awesome, mate.
Absolutely brilliant, mate.
We wrap this up with quick fire questions, really nice and easy.
Okay.
So, really fun. Said the same to Dino. If you're in I'm a Celebrity and you've got to the final, you have a choice of four. You can choose your starter. Anything you want to have as a starter for your food, main, dessert, and drink, and what are you choosing? What's your starter? What's your main? What's your dessert?
So you're in the final.
So you're in the final.
So I'm a Celebrity.
Yeah.
You have three finalists, yeah. Right?
You're in the final.
You're in the final.
They said you can have anything. You can have sweet.
Anything sweet.
Yeah, from a starter, what you have for your starter? Main,
dessert.
Starter,
and drink.
Pate. Always starter.
Main.
Right.
Main, I would go, well, it depends what day. If it was on a Sunday, I'd have pork. Love pork. I had that last Sunday. Me and Lucy went out for lunch. But my main, I'd have a steak. Yeah, Chateau Brown. Right.
He knows the fucking steak, though.
I have a salad.
Most expensive steak.
Yeah, salad. Yeah, you're fucking one.
For dessert, Lucy will laugh, but I'll have a strawberries or cream. I love strawberries or cream. Or I have... strawberry cheesecake.
What's your drink? Pint of Guinness.
Said
you like Guinness, don't you?
Always a Guinness.
But if I run Celebrity, I'd probably have started with the champagne.
Gonna fucking run seven laps.
And then
started with the champagne. Have a good couple of glasses of Chablis. Progress onto the red wine.
You're writing notes here.
Progress onto the red wine. I don't drink shorts. So I don't touch the top shelf.
No, I don't.
And I don't touch that. Progress onto the red wine, a cigar, a little bit of a sing-song.
And off
you go. Hope to get some sex and get to bed.
Good, man. We're going to your Netflix account. What's Carlton currently watching on Netflix? Or any kind of series, documentaries or movies?
I'll tell you what we've... Well, I forgot. I was just telling my mum the other day, because Lucy sorts it all out. I just watch it. We're watching that one They switched the babies at birth. The woman.
I've seen it.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Ah, what's his name? He were in Happy Valley as well.
Yeah.
Great.
And
I know
they switched. They switched the woman.
Yeah, the guy, the Scottish guy with the big house.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
The guy, yeah.
Switched.
Have you finished that?
Yeah, we've just
fucking
watched it.
Fucking brilliant,
wasn't
it?
Yeah, yeah, really,
really
enjoyed
Theo.
It.
Theo. He calls the kid Theo.
Yes, that's
yeah.
right.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We just watched that.
Yeah, swap it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought he had dementia as well.
Nice. What's your go-to karaoke song, Carlton?
Go-to karaoke. I'll tell you a quick story about that. So my go-to is when I was manager of Mansfield Town.
Yeah.
We'd lost a few games, so it was on my toes, right? And I thought, I'm driving to a game. We're playing Notts County, Mansfield Notts County, big derby day, and it's on my toes, right? If we lose, I'm probably going to get the team tacked.
Yeah.
So I never used to go with the lads on the bus because I was playing. I wanted them to have just their time. So I'm in the car. I've got Frank Sinatra on. I did it my way.
Give us a rendition. Go on, Carlton.
So I've got in the dressing. I've got in the dressing room now, and you know, like they've got all the hip hop and whatever.
Yeah.
Just
yeah,
before
yeah.
we went out, I've got it on, haven't I? I did it my way, and I've got all the boys singing it. Fucking hell, they're pumped. They went out. We beat them 3-0, right? And they've all come in, and we've got it on in the dressing room. And now
the end's here,
and I face the final.
Brilliant.
Yeah, now I love it.
Brilliant.
Final
mate.
Question we ask everyone, mate, to wrap this up.
Yeah,
is you've been awesome. You've been brilliant. You've shown that you're great within
Honestly.
Yourself. Honestly, you've been fantastic. To anyone watching this podcast, it doesn't matter if they're working in a factory, it doesn't matter if they're high, whatever. What advice would you give to people watching this back, final from you, of how they can find their own inner greatness?
By being themselves. You've got to be honest with yourself. You've got to be truthful with yourself. You've got to know your own restrictions. You've got to know your own limitations, right? But being honest with yourself, because if you know what you're about, you know what you want to do, then it's clear. It's clear. You have a clear path. When I played football, I knew what my game was. Running, heading, tackling.
Yeah.
I've got a clear path.
Yeah.
I've got to do that every weekend. Do it to the best of my ability. Become the best in the country.
Yeah.
It's a clear path. right? Yeah. So it's being honest with yourself, knowing what you want to do, knowing what you want to achieve, and then it's a pathway to get
just
there.
Just do what you got at, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But be honest with yourself.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
Get, some people kid themselves about, you know, where they are and what they actually are about, and then that's where the problem comes in. Some people think they're actually better than what they are. You know, just be honest with yourself and stay in your lane. I've always stayed in my lane. What I've never been this type of person. I ain't worried about what you've got. I ain't worried about what car you drive, what house you live in, how much money you got. I'm not bothered. Good luck to you. Glad you're doing well. I stay in my lane. And whatever I can afford, whatever I can afford to do, whatever we can do, that's fine. That's me. And I've never been worried. I've never been. If I see somebody who's successful or doing something right, I'm curious as to know what's their game plan to get to what.
Yeah, to get
and can I can I incorporate that into my life? And then it's just like now. I don't need to strive to do anything else now in my life at 59. I've just got to live my life out now and be happy and enjoy it. Yeah. And that, but to get to that position, you've got to be in a position where you're comfortable and you're at ease with yourself.
Brilliant.
Do you know what I mean?
Captain Palmer.
Cheers, thank you very much.
Absolute legend, mate.
Thanks for having me on.
Brilliant. Amazing. Absolutely. Cheers. First ever guest. Absolutely incredible.
Top man.